Just going to scroll through and just can't make eye contact with you guys, but I can look at your faces and you can give me a little wave. Great. Yeah, so I'll be chat host. And I'm delighted, if not a little nervous, but what's the worst that can happen? Yeah, so as Bodhi-Lila said, we're going to record the questions and answers this time. So by how this is going to go is, yeah, just speak into the space. Might be that a couple of people unmute together, but you'll just have to negotiate that between you in a polite dance until someone doesn't budge. Yes, and if you would like me to ask the question, then do write something in the chat box. If there are quite a few things in the chat box that are similar in tone, then I might bunch them together and put that forward to Bodhi-Lila and Paramananda in one go. And just to say that there's no silly question here. Yeah, I think we're all quite experienced, but there really is no silly question. And if you're a type of person who feels a bit nervous, then, you know, play with that. Maybe lean in. If you're someone who always is kind of chomping at the bit to ask a question, then practice leaning back as well. So you get a nice balance. So the floor is open, if I haven't forgotten anything. It's a bit of stuff in the chat box. Everyone can hear me okay? Not everybody. Would anyone like to offer the first question? I think the invitation from Paramananda earlier was almost anything goes. What's coming up? What's alive? Any clarification? Anything goes. Oh yes, one final thing. If you put a question in, it will be really, we prefer to hear voices actually. It gets us a sense of you and maybe a little bit more behind the words. But if you do bring in your question, put the question in and then mute. Otherwise on the recording, people will see a kind of tennis match between you and the person answering the question.
Can I ask a question?
Absolutely, Jacqueline.
So, Paramananda, hi there, it's Jacqueline here.
Hi, Jack.
You said something about the heart is the place where duality is resolved. That's how I heard it. Could you say anything more about that at all?
Well, I suppose what I mean by that, other than it just sounds kind of good, doesn't it? But what I mean, there's a couple of things in it. Physiologically, the heart, I mean, I know it has more than two chambers, but it's basically divided down the middle, isn't it? And so actually the heart, even as a physical organ, is divided from itself, one half from the other, otherwise the circulatory mechanism couldn't work, yeah? So the blood goes out right around the body and comes back in the other side, doesn't it? So it's physically divided. And it's also, as a symbolic organ, as a metaphorical organ, it always holds the two opposites. So there's no quality we can attribute to the heart where we cannot attribute the opposite quality to the heart. So love, hate, courage, cowardice, boldness, shyness, if you go on, so every quality, tenderness, cruelty, you know, any quality you can attribute to the heart, you can also attribute the opposite quality. So in that sense, somewhere in the heart, in the chambers of the heart, both qualities exist quite close to each other. So the light and the shadow or the dark exist in this one organ. So I meant it in that way, but what I meant perhaps more than anything is the resolution of so-called, from a Buddhist perspective, the basic dualism is self and other, isn't it? There's lots of different dualisms, male, female, light, dark, whatever, loads of different dualisms. But from a Buddhist perspective, right at the heart of Buddhism, is this idea of self, thick self, in a kind of open, fluid nature of things. And I think when we locate that in the heart, we locate that dualism as fundamentally a matter of feeling rather than fundamentally an idea. And I must say, I think a lot of Western Buddhism understands it fundamentally as an idea. And although it certainly has that aspect to it, we have ideas that are dualistic. In the end, it's a feeling. We either feel that we belong in the world, or we feel that we're separate from the world. And so, again, the resolution for that is symbolically something to do with the heart. And it's also something to do, so I'm going on a bit here, but maybe it's quite fundamental to it. I don't want any of you to take this literally, but it's also fundamental to the fact that the heart is in the center of the body. So we've got the instinctual, the unconscious, the animal below, and you've got this sort of intellect, objective view above. And it's in the heart that these two are brought together. So again, the dualism is resolved in the sense that the heart regulates the other centers of consciousness in the body and brings them all into a functional relationship with one another. So when the whole nervous system or the whole energetic system or the whole intelligent system, from the vegetative intelligence to the kind of objective, reflective, self-reflective intelligence working together, that dualism, I would suggest, is kind of resolved. So I think that's why I'm choosing the heart at the moment. So I hope, and maybe that's enough. Does that help, Jacqueline?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, that was great, thank you.
Do you have anything you'd like to add, Bodhilila, or we can
I
go on to
a full response to that, though. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, the dualism, isn't it? Because I think even with that poem, we've got that in the first line about the going beyond ideas of right doing and wrong doing. We do tend to think and approach life in a very dualistic way. And I think it is an experience, isn't it? And I think even that thinking about the mind and the heart being separate, that's very dualistic way of thinking and very Western way of thinking. Because within Buddhism, you've got citta, which is often translated as mind, but could also be translated as heart. And the whole idea of awakening the, you know, in terms of insight, you could translate it as the awakening mind or the awakening heart. And there's that sense that the two aren't really separate. And I don't think it's possible really to gain true insight without involving the heart, from my point of view, yeah.
Great, thank you for that question, Jacqueline.
Can I ask a question?
Maitranita, yes.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm just asking Paramananda, from this morning, there was the image of growth and I wasn't quite clear. It sounded as though growth was not a good thing. And yet it feels like it's a natural thing. So I'm just not really clear what you kind of meant by growth.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm glad you asked that question. Of course, growth in one sense is a very positive thing, and we're all born, aren't we? And we all grow, and then we die. And of course, that's a part of the basic cycle of all life. Not only a good thing, it's a completely essential thing, and we celebrate it all the time. I mean, I didn't mean it like that. I kind of meant, when this morning I was trying to refer into the obsession we now have as a political economy towards growth, yeah, that we seem to think that all political economies have to grow, businesses have to grow. You know, there used to be a time before the Industrial Revolution that a business might exist for many generations in a fairly stable state, supplying people with a good livelihood, employment, and the necessities of life, and that was just how things were. But now we've got built into our economic system, we've got the idea of untrammeled or unlimited growth. So now, if a company just remains on the same level, it fails. It's a failure and we'll go out of business. It has to grow. And I think sometimes we absorb these economic models into the spiritual life. And it's this idea that somehow we have to be improving all the time. We have to be getting more. It's something about being more all the time that I have a problem with, you know. It's something about how this is associated with a kind of accumulation, something becoming more all the time. So I'm using, I've got nothing against growth in and of itself. It's just when the growth becomes out of control already, or just becomes a raison d'etre, it's seen in and of itself a good thing. But obviously the growth of some things is good and the growth of other things is bad, you know. Want to use that terminology. So I hope that, I don't know, you know, as I said, I just use it in a particular way. I was particularly, this morning I got quite exercised by this whole relationship with human beings have got with the earth. And of course, in that, the idea that we can keep having economic growth, chief exploits in the world is just, well, one, ridiculous, and two, just awful, you know, brutal. You know, we're brutalizing the world, we're destroying every other species that exists on this planet, and of course we will end up destroying ourselves as well. And a lot of it is prompted by this idea of growth. You know, economies have got to grow. We've got to become wealthier, even though very often in the process of becoming wealthier, we become more anxious, more insecure, more alienated, more neurotic, and so on and so forth. You know, so this sort of growth I've got it in for. But obviously there are, you know, very beautiful and necessary and desirable forms of growth.
I mean, I think it is interesting how we often bring views, habits, ways of thinking, ways of approaching our lives in the outside world into our spiritual practice, often without being conscious of that. So whatever our habits are about how we approach life, we will tend to approach our meditation in that way. You know, the kind of effort we make or the expectations we have, how we see ourselves as meditators. And I think, yes, that idea of growth can be one of them, or wanting to achieve something, wanting to have levels of attainment or something like that. And there's always, there are so many kind of, well, there are dualities and contradictions in how we approach our practice, because on the one hand, if we made no effort at all, we'd probably not get anywhere and just be drifting away in a kind of daydream or soup a lot of the time when we're sitting. But on the other hand, if we get very, very focused on wanting something to happen or make something happen, that's also not very helpful. It doesn't give us that openness for stuff to emerge and things to, I suppose, grow more naturally. So it's sort of like, you know, and all the ways that we might say, this is a good meditation, this is a bad meditation. I think that's a classic one, isn't it? Oh, I'm a good meditator or a bad meditator. Rather than I'm sitting here and this is what I'm experiencing, you know. So I don't know if that makes any sense, but I think there is that whole thing of just noticing what our patterns and habits are that are coming into our meditation practice. Whether or not we might need to sort of let go of something or switch something up.
Thank you. Thank you. That really explored it. And yeah. Food for thought, more food for thought. So thank you.
Bon appetit. So are we going to about 25 past? We might have time for one more question. Speak up. Or, oh, here's a question in the chat box. Paramananda spoke of the descent into softening, opening and relaxing. How does he relate to ascent? Is it to the divine? How do you relate to ascent?
Well, I think that's a really interesting question and quite a complex question that maybe we'll get a chance to go into in more detail, you know. But I think the challenge for us now is not to ascend to the divine, but to bring the divine back down into the material. So it's a drawing down into us. So to re-divine the world, if you like, this re-enchantment of the world. And I think, I mean, obviously, you know, within a spiritual tradition, to be full, it requires both a descent into the underworld, if you like, and the ascent up into the spirit world. But really, we've been talking about the dualism. We're trying to reconcile the two, aren't we? You know, in Buddhism, we say, you know, actually, there's no difference between samsara and nirvana. I get them two mixed up, you know, Nevada and nirvana. It's a bit difficult when I live in America, but anyway, you know. We need both, you know. But in the end, the two. I think for many of us, because we think of thought, because it's less form as higher than sensation, for instance, we've hierarchy. We've got a terrible tendency in the West to place everything in a hierarchy, actually. And this is partly due to, as I say, it's such a complicated question. Monotheism did something quite, it did a certain violence to everything, because before we had monotheism, the creation and the Godhead were not separate. Monotheism separated the creator from the created and therefore caused this fundamental split. And as Westerners, this is what we're working with. We're working with a fundamental severance between us and, to use this language, between us and the divine. And this is because we separated the creation from the creator. And this becomes partly facilitated through placing the Godhead above, making it masculine, ridding it of form, making it formless, placing it above, removing it from an embodied experience, removing it from the earth, if you like, removing it, severing it from the feminine and the womb, and we're left with this disembodied spirit which has no form. And given the situation we're in, both psychologically and environmentally in this world, we do not need a disembodied spirit. We need to bring spirit back down into earth. And psychologically, that means we have to value the descent as well as the ascent. You can't just value the ascent. I don't know if that, I mean, as I say, it's a very interesting, complex question that just opens up into more and more questions, but that clarifies something. Well, not clarifies. Suggests something. Pardon?
I suppose for me, one of the things that's interesting around Buddhism and the Dharma and spiritual path is that you don't have a creator god. But we do have all these archetypal figures, mythological figures. And when you were talking about that, I was particularly thinking of someone like Padmasambhava, part historical, part mythological, supposed to have brought Buddhism to Tibet. And then the story that we hear is how they've been trying to build a Buddhist temple, and every evening the local spirits and would knock down the foundations. You know, and that when Padmasambhava came, what he did is he went first into the underworld and he converted all the demons. And then after that, they were able to build that temple. And the idea that each of the demons was guarding a jewel, you know, and I think that's a sort of like metaphorical way of, again, acknowledging the fact that we do need to own the sort of underworld or the shadow side or whatever, and we need to actually integrate that as part of our practice, consciously, unconsciously. We can't just go for the light or the ascent, you know, there's that term spiritual bypassing. I think often on a spiritual path, people want to just feel that they're ascending and they don't have all the messy bits and all the difficult bits, but I don't think that's possible really. So I think you need both, really.
Great, thank you for your answers. The person who asked the question just says, I love that, and I hope we do hear more at some point in this retreat. So.
Sure, we will.
Okay. So it's about 27 minutes past. Shall I hand it back over to Odilila Praninita? Thank you for your questions, everybody. And if there was a burning question that you didn't ask, we're going to have this every day this week. Or you can put it in the chat box and maybe Odilila Paramananda can address it in one of the talks in the 10:30 session somehow. Okay, thank you very much.
And thank you very much, Sophie.
Yeah, thanks,
Sophie.
Welcome.
Right. Seb, Praninita, anything you wanted to say?
I think just if you do have a question, do put it in good time now so I can take a note of it. So if there's something burning that you do want Bodhila and Paramanda to be thinking about, then do put it in there to everyone or we'll try to bring it in.
Okay, well, thanks everybody for coming and passing in for some interesting questions, and hopefully it'll evolve over the retreat. That was, I think, our experience last time, that a lot of themes kind of emerged to explore as the week went on. And yes, hopefully